Manhattan has visitors all year long, even in a July as hot as this one was turning out to be. People come from all over the world to visit this great city. Tourists flood the streets, clog the restaurants, jam the subways and buses. For the most part, the natives shrug it off. It takes a lot more than a plague of tourists to shake a New Yorker. They are hardened to the sight of flocks of strangers gawking up at the tall buildings, and mostly they don't mind. They've come to think of the tourists as strolling ATMs. The man who got out of the cab at Park Avenue and 62nd Street that Tuesday in July was clearly a tourist, and he would not attract any second looks, not in Manhattan, not on a brutally hot day like this. He was average height, average build, and had light brown hair of medium length. The clothes he wore were just what any summer tourist was wearing. Lightweight cargo shorts, a bright Hawaiian shirt, and blue Nikes with white crew socks. He wore large sunglasses, of course, and a blue baseball cap that read NYC on the front, and he had a small nylon backpack over his shoulder. He paid the cabbie, carefully counting out a 10% tip, and then he turned and sauntered easily up the sidewalk toward 63rd Street. After crossing 63rd, he pulled a camera out of his pack and slung it around his neck, the first noteworthy thing about him since cameras have become a relic of the past, almost totally replaced by cell phones. But this camera had a top-notch telephoto lens, and it soon became clear why this man preferred it over a cell phone. As he paused and took careful photos of the older and more interesting buildings along his way, concentrating on the decorative strips around windows and doors, it was obvious that he was an architecture buff. Perfectly natural. Only a camera can capture detail the way this man wanted it. At 64th Street, he paused a bit longer and took quite a few shots of the unusual old building there. That was easy to understand since this was a very rare building indeed. It had been designed by Buford Harris Whittington, one of Stanford White's lesser protégés, and although it had many of the features made famous by White, columns, an imposing facade, frenetic gingerbread around the roof's edge, it lacked the flair of the buildings White had designed personally, like the Metropolitan Club. Instead, it was solid, a little imposing, with a look somewhere between a bank and a fortress. And that is exactly what the 19th-century robber baron had in mind when he commissioned it to house his growing collection of artwork. He demanded something that was not a mere building, but a fortress, a vault, a structure that would tell people there were treasures inside, but they were his. And they would stay that way, safe, secure, inviolate. His treasures were still there, still safe, and the robber baron's descendants had carefully grown the art collection until it was one of the finest private collections anywhere. And the building that still kept them safe had become mildly famous among a certain circle. So if the man with the camera took a lot of pictures, from many different angles, it was perfectly understandable. After all, what fan of 19th-century American architecture wouldn't want to study the Eberhardt Museum? After walking all around the museum, taking pictures from every angle, the photographer moved on. He walked up to 66th Street, and before he crossed Park Avenue, he paused for one last long look at the Eberhardt, a look of distant calculation on his face. Then the light changed and the man moved on, across Park, and then across town.